Hello, I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 374 for Sunday, February 21st, 2016, are Don Donfris.
Hello, everybody.
Richard Grady.
Hello, everyone.
And our resident beer nerd, David Jewart.
374, really?
Yep.
That's awesome. Hi, everybody. Good evening.
So tonight on the BeerCast, it's all about IPAs. And we've talked about these beers before, actually. Dave was listening back to our Thanksgiving episode, and we made some reference to each of these three beers. But we'll be talking about them in a great deal more detail than we did back then. That was, you know, kind of just a throwaway reference, maybe some suggestions. Here we're going to get into the finer points of these three excellent IPA examples. But before we get into the IPA discussion, I do want to take a minute and remind you that the Diz Dads podcast is sponsored by Fantastic Memories Travel and its Mousemaster Travel Group. The Mousemaster Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and Mousemaster agents would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so you can focus on the fun. You can check them out at mousemastertravel.com. Tonight, we're talking about, as I mentioned, three different IPAs. We've got a Goose Island IPA, a New Belgium Ranger, and the Ballast Point Sculpin, and I believe we've got a couple of different versions of that Ballast Point Sculpin around the panel.
Beer.
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 We love beer.
We're going to start off with the Goose Island IPA, but before we get into that, I guess, you know, we've talked about it before, but maybe Dave can give us just a quick overview reminder on the IPA style.
Not a 25-minute dissertation like what normally happens when I talk about beer.
I understand the temptation.
Yes, I know. So, I know I've told the story before, so we won't go completely into it. So, IPA stands for India Pale Ale. These beers harken back to the days when the British Empire had, you know, those colonies over in India and tons of troops there. They all wanted a taste of home, and they apparently didn't want Scotch eggs. They wanted pale ale. They wanted beer from home. But at that point, to get to India from Great Britain, you had to go the whole way down around South Africa, come back up. It was a really, really long journey, and a lot of the beer that they had, a lot of the pale ales that they had, wouldn't make the journey, and it would skunk. So what they developed over time was a more highly alcoholic and a higher hopped version of the standard pale ale. Basically, both alcohol and hops, some of the alpha acids in hops, are both preservatives. Obviously, we know alcohol is, but the hops added some preservative factor to the beer also. So the beer would make it to India and still be drinkable, and it had, you know, new flavors to it. It was more highly hopped. It was a little more bitter. It probably didn't have what we in America now consider the classic American IPA, but it had a lot of bitter, a caramel backbone. It probably had a little bit of sour notes because those barrels probably weren't completely clean. But exactly. Yeah. So it got over there. It was a taste from home, and that was fantastic. So fast forward.
So that's the backstory on APA, but I think the maybe the part that we want to catch people up on a little bit is that, you know, IPAs have kind of become one of the most common craft brews or microbrews that we see. I mean, it's just about every craft brewer takes on an IPA style, and it's become one of the most popular sort of niche styles in America.
Well, yeah, if you fast forward to now, to the new craft brew revolution since the mid-80s, IPAs have gained in popularity. And surprisingly, with how bitter they are and how sweet the American palate kind of trends, right? IPAs are everywhere now. Like, if you walk into a bar and you ask them what they have on tap, besides your standards, there's probably an IPA, even if they only have six or eight taps. It is a style that is prevalent. It is a style that has been Americanized, has become bigger. We've not only gone to the IPA with a higher alcoholic content, we have decided to coin a term called double IPA or Imperial IPA and go the whole way up to a very highly alcoholic 9, 10, 11, 12% and a very highly hopped version of something that was already a kicked up version of something from England. So,
okay.
So, you know, we're looking at something that if you're a craft brewer in America, you are making an IPA. So, I know we've hit on this a lot on previous podcasts. We've already done probably three or four IPAs, but you're going to see, I know I said this last time, there's probably almost a dozen IPAs on Disney's standard beer menu.
You can find all three. Well, you can find at least a version of all three of these beers at Walt Disney World currently, but they are a little harder to find. And these tend to be beers that might sort of pop up on a menu, not the standard beer menu, but on sort of that rotating menu that seems to change a little more frequently at the different bar locations, just, you know, based on what they happen to bring in for the next, you know, 3 months or whatever.
Right. And you know, at the end of the day, you're going to be able to go in and find an IPA, High Lie, which we've talked about before, be it Two Hearted, which we've talked about before. There's plenty of IPAs to find. These are just some that they're available at the World, but they're also ones that, you know, we spend more time away from there than not. These are ones that are kind of fun to seek out and are relatively easy to find at home. So they're worth looking into.
All right. So let's dive into some beer so that Don and Richard can join in the conversation. We're going to start with the Goose Island IPA out of Chicago. And I noticed that this is one of the first Goose Island beers that I've found in a can.
Yeah, I didn't this round, but I know Buddy has gotten pounders recently. There we go. So, and it's actually better out of a can than it is a bottle, but that's just my mantra when it comes to beer in general. So
yeah, I only found it in bottles here, so.
Yeah, I only found it in bottles as well.
Well, apparently cans only go outside of...
Well, that's true. I'm a little farther from the home area of Goose Island. It's a Chicago beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I found they had six packs of glass bottles, and then they had four packs of cans.
And pounder, so, right?
Yeah.
16s, yeah.
Yeah, 16s. So I went ahead and grabbed the cans. So I don't know. David, want to give us a little bit of background on Goose Island, or a backstory for us?
A little bit, nothing crazy. Goose Island, Chicago brewery, one of the they're kind of in that first range. So the Dogfish Head, the Anchors, the Sam Adams, they're early '80s, mid '80s, getting into the early '90s, and basically owner went out, decided he wanted to make some beer. And so they've done a lot of other stuff that's a lot bigger. They were one of the first breweries to start to barrel age beer in bourbon barrels. So they're really known for stuff like their Big Eddie Imperial Stout, their Bourbon County Stout, also the Bourbon County Barley Wine, like these really 12, 13, 14% really big beers. This is their standard. This is their standard IPA. It is more it's focused more on kind of an English tradition as opposed to an American IPA. That's kind of the big thing. And I'm going to step back real quick. But as we go through these, yeah, we're talking about IPAs, and all IPAs aren't created equal. But a good IPA, depending on where it lands in the whole spectrum, is this is very old school. This has a lower citric nose. It's more piney. It has a nice caramel backbone, but it's not too filling. And the bitter is there, and it's a really earthy bitter, okay? And as we progress through these, until we get to that Sculpin and that grapefruit Sculpin, it's going to go from earthy and bitter to complete fruit, dirty cat pee, okay? That's the spectrum
of IPA.
Make
it sound so appealing.
It is. It is completely appealing. Appealing. Appeeing. No, but, I mean, we're going to run the gambit here in three beers.
Yeah.
So...
All right, well, so this Goose Island IPA, it's about 5.9% alcohol, so, you know, a little bit stronger than your BMC kind of beers, but we're not talking about those 10%, 12% barley wine kind of beers. Don, you're the Chicago guy, so why don't you get us started with some of your impressions of the Goose Island IPA?
I really enjoyed this one. It's pretty... mellow by some of the IPA standards as far as it's not real bitter. I did catch the pine in it, and yeah, not a lot of citrus to it. Pretty smooth. This is a beer where you can knock a few of these down pretty easily. It's not real biting. So I enjoyed this a lot. Nice, smooth one.
Yeah. I would agree with that assessment. I found a lot of that sort of, you know, session beer feel to it. You know, it's interesting to me because it poured this really nice kind of, you know, thick, creamy head. But at the same time, it doesn't drink really as an intensely carbonated beer. Which seemed kind of, you know, bizarre to me a little bit. But it doesn't have that, you know, sometimes a beer that's heavily carbonated, you have that really sort of full feeling as you drink it. This doesn't have that at all. Really, really nice sort of, you know, golden orange flavor or color. And I agree with Don's assessment, really easy drinking feel. There is a little bitterness, but it just really only on the aftertaste. Very little bitter up front.
Right.
How about you, Richard?
Yeah, I'm going to agree on the whole kind of a session IPA feel to it. Yeah, it has the bitterness and a bit of astringency kind of afterwards. So, you know, you get kind of a dry mouth, which really just you remedy by having a little bit more. So... I guess
that
works.
Built-in remedy.
Exactly. No, it poured really well. It's a nice clear color. It's certainly something that, yeah, you could knock back two or three of these, you know, sitting around in an afternoon. It's not going to leave you feeling heavy and full, and it's not going to leave you just unable to stand. It's a nice, relaxing, all-day kind of thing.
Yeah, sure. Any tasting notes you want to add, Dave?
Well, I was just going to say, you guys hit on the whole session thing, right? And we remember tasting the all-day IPA.
Mm-hmm.
This is very similar to that with a little more alcohol. So
I was just going to say, this was, yeah, that's what I would compare it to.
All-day was actually, like a 5.3?
Yeah, it was a little less than that. But on top of that, the all-day I thought was nowhere near as balanced as this.
Yeah, I like this a lot better than the all-day.
And I remember saying, the all-day IPA is great, except for the fact that I couldn't drink this all day. This, this I could. And that's kind of the beauty of it with a lot of American IPAs going for that big upfront, in-your-face citrus stuff. This is a very good example of what an IPA was before it became what it is. Now, Richard, I have to ask, you are our food pairing guy.
Mm-hmm.
What are we eating with this?
I was having pizza rolls with it, so that's not exactly. It went really well with the pizza rolls, but that's
Joe's pizza rolls.
Breakfast of champions, man.
Oh man.
Okay, in this case, it was like late night dinner part two, but I have had them for breakfast before.
Second breakfast.
There's nothing wrong with that.
when you're in college, no. When you're out of college, it gets a little like, what'd you have for breakfast today? I had Cheerios. I had the rolls. it just comes across as really strange. I don't know. This is kind of a...
I don't want to put you on the spot, man.
No, I don't have something that's like really strong in flavor that's going to overpower it. So, like a brat would be good, but I don't think I'd use a cheese brat. I think I'd use just like a regular generic, for lack of a better term. Not too heavily seasoned. I wouldn't use a really spicy mustard with it. Again, because I don't want it something to really overpower this. I want to be able to taste this afterwards and during.
See, my sense was that this would be a really great, you know, like cookout cheeseburger beer.
Yeah. Cheeseburger, yes. Buffalo or bison burger, no, because you get the stronger flavor.
Right, right. No, no. Yeah. You want you know, the juicy burger and maybe cheddar and, you know, lettuce, tomato, just fresh flavors like that.
Right. And I don't think I'd do this with a turkey burger.
I think the turkey gets swallowed.
Yeah. I think you need something with a bit of flavor to it, but... Again, kind of, you've got to walk that line between no flavor in your food, which is unfortunately what a lot of turkey burgers kind of wind up as, and really, really strong flavors. So it's your cheddar brats can be that way, or your beer brats can be that way.
Italian sausage.
Yeah, there you go. So one of the reasons I ask, which, A, you've always come up with something that has been completely opposite of what I'm thinking, which means I'm pretty horrible at pairing beer with food. So, but two was when I was reading up about this, the food pairings on Goose Island's website, and just take this in before you say anything about it. Food pairings: curries, chicken, and pork. Those are three complete opposite flavors.
I don't know, because like when I make a curry or when I get one, I'm the kind of guy that I go in there, like, you know, they rate it from like 1 to 10, where 1 is the mild, and 10 is like the super spicy, and I want the high end spicy curry. So I don't think I think this would be like completely blown away by any curry I'm likely to eat.
Right, but does it put
I can see this with one of the more sort of earthy curries as opposed to a spicy one, like a you know, a yellow curry as opposed to a red curry.
Yeah, I guess I could see that.
I'm not that well versed in curries. I just know that most of the time it's really spice focused and rather hot, not temperature.
Yeah,
hot.
I don't think I don't think I would go for spicy with this particular beer.
I think, like I said, again, you're getting into the flavor would be too strong. Pork might work.
Yeah, pork and chicken are okay. I mean, those are both pretty flat palates. You know, I mean, you can build off of both of those. So whether or not you go a little barbecue or what, but
right, I think with pork or chicken, there's the same danger I have with turkey, and that it's kind of like it's there, but it like they're all good things to add things to bring out more flavor, because they don't have a whole lot of inherent flavor to themselves sometimes.
Right. Agreed. Great. Awesome. So, Aaron, where can we find it?
So we can find the Goose Island IPA at Blue Zoo, Todd English's place in the Dolphin, the hotel there on Crescent Lake. And I get the sense that this is one of the ones that you may find some other places on sort of a seasonal or occasional basis. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as part of the regular beer menu, the only place you're going to find it is at Blue Zoo, which, by the way, we're discovering has a pretty outstanding and large and diverse beer menu.
Yeah, definitely. And one other note concerning this, Goose Island was very limited in their distribution until about 3 years ago. InBev ended up purchasing them. There's a trend now where InBev and other large BMC places and other macros are going out and purchasing these smaller brew pubs that have a footprint, and really all they're doing is saying, look, here's a bunch of money. We want you to sell nationwide. So that's one reason why Goose Island is pretty much everywhere, and it would not surprise me that you start to see more Goose Island offerings on Disney property, because even here in PA, we never got it here in PA, and all of a sudden you can find Sophie and so in like the Bourbon County Stouts and stuff that was honestly Chicago centric here, easily accessible. So it's one to keep your eye out for, and it's one to keep your eye out for down there. So
that was the Goose Island IPA, and I think we all enjoyed that quite a bit. It's probably on the sort of the lighter end of the scale as far as the IPAs that we're going to be tasting tonight. And because they're all rather strong flavors, I should mention that we're all sitting here with, you know, something we can eat that'll help cleanse the palate a little bit. I've got some good salty pretzels and a glass of water here. I don't know, Richard mentioned he was munching on pizza rolls. Don,
yeah,
what are you using as a palate cleanser?
I have Ritz crackers.
There we go. Some crackers for Don. What about you, Dave?
I have a Sabra Classic Hummus with some small tortilla bites.
Tasty.
Ah, yes. I like hummus. Don't know. That was it.
All right. Very good. Very good. So that was the Goose Island. We're going to now step up to sort of the next, at least Dave's assessment, the next sort of flavor palette, I don't know, what do you call it? The next rung of bigger flavor, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we're kind of going through a progression here on old school kind of islands version to completely Americanized, blow you out of the water West Coast IPA.
All right. So we're now moving to the New Belgium Ranger IPA.
Yeah, and if you actually think about it, we are going east to west. Which, there's a whole, like, East Coast, West Coast rap battle going on with IPAs. it has been for a while. A lot of stuff that Pizza Port did. A lot of stuff that Stone does. A lot of stuff that, I mean, Russian River has been a forerunner in making IPAs. Those are all West Coast places. So the East Coast, like Dogfish Head, which we had the 60-minute, 90-minute conversation on the last podcast. But, you know, there are two different schools. So it's like big, citrusy, whatever, and the other one is very balanced. It's interesting. Right. Any rate, as we go further west, we're going to get more of a citrusy focus to these beers. So New Belgium.
So let's pour this New Belgium Ranger.
All right.
Then go around and get some commentary here. Now, Dave, why don't you give us a little bit of background on New Belgium? I know that this is another one of those breweries that for a long time was hard to find their product there in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was easy to find everywhere but Pennsylvania. It's so frustrating. I've been a Fat Tire fan for a long freaking time. New Belgium's a brewery out of Fort Collins, Colorado, about an hour north of Denver. And over the years, over about the last 10 years, they have steadily increased their distribution. They are still an independent brewery. They've brewed out west, brought it east. They opened a new brewery down outside of Asheville, North Carolina, and are now distributing throughout the East Coast also. The thing is when they started doing this 3 years ago on the East Coast, they skipped Pennsylvania, which frankly pissed me off.
Dave.
Yeah, I know. Sad face, Dave. So I've been a big fan of New Belgium. I've been to the brewery. It was out there on business, stopped in for a whopping, like, it was 12 minutes, but whatever. I was at least there. So they run the gambit on what they produce. Their Fat Tire, which is their standard amber ale that is a complete gateway beer that a lot of people use to get into craft, is completely accessible, fantastic, tastes like chocolate, is an amber ale, just an awesome, awesome beer. And they run this up to where they have their employees, who a lot of them are homebrewers themselves, pretty sure yearly enter a contest, and the winner, their beer goes into what they call their Lips of Faith series, and they produce this winning homebrewed beer nationwide now, and put it out. And the Lips of Faith series just came out. La Folie is one of their big ones. It's a sour ale. They do a Creek. They do Eric's Ale, which is a really weird peach sour. Just really good stuff, right? Like completely random. But in the midst of all of this, they do some pretty okay IPAs too. Ranger's one of their newest ones. I know, Aaron, you talked about Rampant last time.
Right, right.
I'm also sitting here staring at a bottle of Citradelic, which is a tangerine IPA that they just came out with. So they we're moving more towards that West Coast kind of IPA. That as we taste this compared to the last one, you're going to see a little bit less of a caramel body, and you're going to see an increased bitterness because of that, because the hop bitterness is about the same. And then you're going to start to see this really upfront nose to it. Now, depending on how new your bottle is or can is, but you're going to see this very, very citrus focused, more of a grapefruit, more of a an orange, a lemon kind of vibe to the whole beer. But what we're starting to move towards, what is that West Coast low backbone, high citric IPA?
All right, so with that intro, Richard, why don't you get us started with the discussion of the Ranger IPA from New Belgium?
Okay, so, you know, just like the Goose Island, it's a clear, light, orangish kind of color. Mine had a pretty nice head to it. It still is holding it fairly well. It doesn't have nearly feeling the hoppy feel and the hoppy flavor as much, and it doesn't have the same astringency. There's kind of a fruit note, but I can't figure out what it is. So I just have to keep having some to figure that out. I like it. I mean, it poured really well. It tastes pretty good. I think I like this one a little bit better than the Goose Island. I'm not sure why. The Goose Island was good. I think this one sits me a little better.
Sure. All right. So Don, you liked the Goose Island a lot. What do you think here of the New Belgium IPA?
Ranger. This is pretty good. It's got a little bit more bite to it. Obviously, I mean, that's pretty much what Dave was saying would be. It's still pretty drinkable compared to, like, I'm not as big on some of the really big IPAs, the doubles, and some of those can get pretty harsh.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, this is still a real drinkable. It's got a little bit more bitter on the back end though.
Right.
I'm not sure I'm enjoying it as much, or maybe it's the crackers. because even after a minute or two, I'm still tasting it on the back end, but, it's still really, really a drinkable beer. I enjoy it. I think I enjoyed the Goose Island a little bit more, but this is still pretty good. This is the first time I've had the Ranger. I've had the Fat Tire and the Dog Bite Fat Tire, and I like those really well too. So
maybe just because I'm one of those rare souls who actually likes Beverly.
Well, it's an interesting point because, you know, I noticed, first of all, as soon as I opened the Ranger bottle, I got that much stronger citrus grapefruit, you know, aroma. And that, you know, that initial citrus hit kind of comes through. It's almost more of a kind of a grapefruit zest or grapefruit rind flavor because
right.
It's got that bitter tinge to it right away. And the bitterness definitely comes through much more strongly than the Goose Island IPA bitterness did. Still pretty drinkable. It is interesting to me that Don mentioned that the crackers might be affecting his enjoyment of it, because I do notice that I don't know whether it's that the pretzels don't go well with the beer, or if it's just that the salt on the pretzels is making parts of my tongue more sensitive to the bitter from the beer, because that may be it too. But it doesn't seem to be as much. The Goose Island, I could see sitting at the bar munching on, you know, peanuts or pretzels and drinking a beer. I don't get that same sense from the Ranger. Maybe that's just me, but that's one thing that kind of jumped out at me.
Well, it overall, and I just wrote down some stats for the three beers that we're getting into. So the Goose Island was just under 6% alcohol. And the IBUs, which is International Bittering Units. Have we talked about these yet? I don't know if we have.
We've referred to them a couple of times, but I don't know that we've gotten into any detail about them.
So the long and short of it is IBU is a way to measure the residualness of the alpha acid content of the hops that are bittering the beer. So it's International Bittering Units for a reason. Basically, there's a way to measure it. We won't get into that. But the lower the number, the less bitter, the higher the number, the more bitter. The funny thing is there's a bunch of double IPAs and triple IPAs and a bunch of really stupid big IPAs that tout the fact that we have 187 international bittering units. Yeah, the human tongue can't taste anything over like 87.
Okay, so when you talk about blowing away your tongue, there are plenty of beers out there that are doing that.
Exactly. And I mean, it's that 87, I off the top of my head, I forget. I'd have to actually look it up. But it's not much more than 90 or 100 IBUs. So the Goose Island at 55 is getting up there. But if it's, let's just say it's 90 for this exercise, the Ranger IPA in comparison is 6.5% alcohol. So the alcohol is higher, and the number of IBUs is 70. So you are getting to the high end of what y'all can taste, which everyone kind of, without knowing this information ahead of time, everyone kind of noted, this one's a bit more bitter. This one isn't as balanced. This one doesn't quite go with the salty pretzels, and that's the reason. So now we're getting into that much more bitter IPA that isn't quite as balanced. So just an interesting note, you know.
So, okay, so let me ask this. So we now know a little bit more about why. You know, it's a little less balanced. It's going to be heavy towards the bitter. Richard, what do you eat with it?
You didn't know you were going to get put on the line like this, did you, Richard?
By the way, there is an answer.
Oh, I've looked at their the official website for the pairings on this one since I figured I'd be put on the spot. And the official one they list, like, you know, you should pair this with Thai or Vietnamese or Indian food, Cajun or Mexican. I think it would work with those. I think since it's definitely a stronger flavor. I'd certainly step it up a bit and go with like a stronger Italian sausage, or I'll still make hamburgers with it, but now I'm going to start adding something to the hamburger. Probably not like an applewood, but you know, something to kick up the flavor of the burger to kind of match what I'm getting here.
So that makes a lot of sense to me. So what you're doing there is basically answering the bitter with spice, right? Because you want to bring the food kind of up to the level of what the beer is doing inside your mouth.
I want to have food that I can taste and beer that I can taste at the same time. I don't want one to completely obliterate the other. So I'm going to start looking for a stronger flavor.
This is where chicken wings come in.
Oh, yeah, there you go. That would work.
This is where that standard buffalo flavor, this is where going and I mean, I think each one of us, if you think about it, you could have this beer with a plate of hot wings and it would hold up completely, and you would like be drinking a bunch of it with like sauce on your fingers and you're trying to grab it without putting your fingers on the glass kind of deal.
Right, because you want to be able to lick the fingers after you've had some of the beer.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
Got a question for you, Dave.
Yeah.
The, you know, when they have the, you know, like on these IPAs, they have like a kind of a lifespan to them.
Yes.
So as it's getting closer to the end of it, is it getting more bitter?
You're going to perceive it as more bitter, but no, it is not. So IPAs, and this is just a general statement. If you purchase an IPA, make sure it's fresh. You don't want to purchase an IPA from the beer store that no one goes to. And here's why. As you get further into the quote-unquote American IPA kind of spectrum here as we're moving forward, I already mentioned something about alpha acids, right? And the hops bitter beer, right? So I mentioned on the last cast that I'm not going to go completely into it, but there are different spots in the brewing process where people add hops. The earlier you add it, the more you get the bitter flavor from the hops. In the middle, you get the flavor from the hops. At the end, you get the nose from the hops. Okay? What contributes both the flavor and the nose to the hops are a lot of very volatile oils in the hops. They don't last long. Even when you put them in the beer and you dry hop afterwards and you get this really big, skunky, disgusting cat litter, awesome, citrus-loving greatness when you smell this thing, right? If you buy that beer and you wait 6 weeks to drink it, you're not going to get the same. You're not going to get the same flavor. You're not going to get the same nose. What you're still going to get is that bitter. So Don, what you're saying is that as the beer progresses in age, it gets more bitter. It really doesn't get more bitter, but that bitter becomes more prevalent completely over the actual flavor of the beer. So something like Hop Slam, which just came out. Bell's, again, a brewery that I've talked about umpteen times on these beer casts, comes out once a year in February with their double IPA called Hop Slam. It has a ton of honey in it, 11%. It is absolutely ridiculously awesome. If you drink it within the first 3 weeks, it's great. I have Hop Slams from 2010 in the basement that are basically turned into an overhopped barley wine. They're good. They're not the same beer. So the fresher you can get IPA, the better at the end of the day. That's it, hands down.
All right. So let's see. Any other tasting notes we need to add? I don't know, Dave, I don't know if you talked about tasting notes on the Ranger specifically.
No, the only thing I have to add about the Ranger is that there's a really ridiculously cool 2.5-minute video that was shot like it was from the 80s about Ranger IPA. So we should probably post that.
Okay, I will look for that. All right.
That's really about it. I mean, we're moving into the fun one now.
Right. So there's the Ranger IPA. Now, the next one is, no two ways about this. This is one of the more expensive beers that we've reviewed. I think the closest thing to it is probably
St. Bernardus.
Yeah, the St. Bernardus was expensive. This is the Ballast Point IPA, and they make two versions that are relatively widely distributed. There's a Ballast Point Sculpin IPA, and then the Ballast Point Grapefruit Sculpin IPA.
There's a third one.
And I know that there's at least another, although it's not as widely distributed. So this one, I know that Richard picked up the regular Sculpin IPA. Don, which one did you find?
I got the Sculpin.
All right. Well, I went with the Grapefruit Sculpin, at least partially because I was at Walt Disney World last week and enjoyed a Schoferhofer grapefruit beer. It occurred to me, I mean, that, you know, the Schoferhofer is like the opposite grapefruit beer from the Ballast Point Sculpin, right? Because it's like 2%, 2.5% alcohol. And the Grapefruit Sculpin is 7% alcohol. So it's going to have a little different profile, and I thought it would be an interesting comparison.
It completely is, and mainly because the Schoferhofer, quote-unquote grapefruit beer, is a shandy. So it's 50% grapefruit juice and 50% their Hefeweizen. This is an IPA that they put grapefruit in.
Right.
Ah.
So it's completely different. And personally, I feel grapefruit accents an IPA better than going with the whole Shandy deal with it. Because when you go through the flavor profile of a lot of different hops, one of the citrus flavors that they produce is grapefruit. So you get this grapefruit orange slash lemon kind of amalgamation of citric flavors from the hops. So you put a little grapefruit in it, and it just, it kind of pulls that out a little more.
Okay.
Unfortunately, being in the beer desert that is central Pennsylvania, I thought I could get Ballast Point on a more regular basis. Well, whenever I went to get it this week, I couldn't. So I grabbed a couple that I'm going to use is kind of
probably doubles.
Really well, yeah, really. I was gonna say really bad surrogates. I've had grapefruit Sculpin, and it is awesome. I've had regular Sculpin, a very good IPA. Again, we're getting further west. Just to go with kind of our stats here, we're now up to 7% alcohol overall, but we still have the 70 IBUs. So I'm interested to see what you guys think, whether or not it's more balanced than the Ranger IPA. And no one got both, right? Like, we can't do a side by side.
No, nobody got both. As I was starting to say, it's probably the most expensive. It was $14.99 for a six pack here.
Okay.
For either one. So I grabbed the grapefruit and wasn't willing to spend, you know, $30 just on Ballast Point.
Yeah. Well, I got two different ones, because I got the regular one, and then there's a habanero one. I picked that up.
Ooh, interesting. Okay.
That's something. I didn't realize they did one.
There's a habanero one. I looked at it like, oh, they've got that. They've got the grapefruit and the regular. Oh, I could convince myself to two of them, because the store I went to, if you buy 4 6 packs, you get a 10% off on all of it.
Wow.
But I couldn't convince myself to buy five.
Dave, you have any background story on Ballast Point for us, even though you couldn't find their beer?
Well, I mean, again, I've been kind of painting this whole, hey, we're moving west. So now we're getting to the true West Coast IPA. We're getting to the true focus on citrus. You know, you look at their website or something, or any information concerning this, you don't see the word pine and you don't see the word bitter, but you're not going to get the first, and you're going to get a whole heck of a lot of the second. But it's going to be balanced out more so by the citrus now than the caramel backbone. And it's a little bit kind of two-pronged here, right? So the more alcohol you have in something, the more it's going to balance it out. To get to more alcohol, you have to put more sugar in, which is then converted. The further west you go, and this is just a general comment, but the further west you go, you put in a bunch of what you would consider base malt, which is a very light barley, which is going to give you alcohol or sugars to turn into alcohol, as opposed to as you stay further east, you're going to get a base malt and, oh, we have to add some color to it. So we're going to put in a caramel malt or something that is it's still barley, but it doesn't have the fermentable sugars that the base malt does. So it's kind of neither here nor there, but it's going to attribute to the fact that this thing is 7% alcohol and a rather clear beer. It's going to be light yellow in color, as opposed to the first one, if you look, was kind of orange. We were getting to that caramel color.
Right.
So this, you're going to get apricot, peach, mango, lemon, grapefruit, those citric flavor, citric smells and flavors that can really balance out the bitter and the caramel backbone. So you should see a complete difference between the Goose Island and this.
Okay. So let's see. Don, why don't you get us started with the regular Ballast Point Sculpin?
After you hit mute. There
yes, you are correct, sir. Ballast Point Sculpin. Definitely got a little bit more bite to it. Still pretty smooth. I guess I keep comparing this to some of the... I know this is Dave's lovely, or one of his favorites is Three Floyds. But a little definitely smoother than the Three Floyds. A lot of their stuff. I know Dave said I catch more pine than I do the citrus. Maybe it's just my palate, or maybe it's the crackers. It's definitely more of a hit you. There's not, to me, a big range of flavors in it. I get, you know, just the hit of what it is. It's a good beer. I don't think I would drink these all day long, but I enjoy it. So I liked it. Not my favorite out of the three, though.
All right, so Richard, what's your take on the Sculpin?
The regular or the habanero one?
Well, start with the regular first, since that's what we've heard some about.
I've opened the habanero, but I haven't tried it yet. And I'm mighty glad I labeled the glasses. Yes, I'm using disposable clear plastic. I like it. It's kind of a toss-up between this or the Ranger. This one seems a little more bitter. I think the IBUs is basically the same on it. It's good. I certainly enjoy it. It seems like I can taste a bit more of the citrus that you're talking about. I don't taste any of the pine that you say you won't see it. No, I don't. I don't have that kind of pine resiny odor or mouthfeel. It's good. I think I'd probably give the nod to the Ranger just because I think the Ranger was a little bit less in price.
Right, yeah.
But if this is on the menu, I certainly wouldn't avoid it.
Yeah, now I've got the grapefruit version, and I, you know, based on what I've heard you two say about the regular Sculpin, I think I made the right choice in going with the grapefruit version, because as Dave was talking about the grapefruit, you know, balancing the inherent IPA bitterness, it really does help. And I don't think I would enjoy this nearly as much in the standard IPA form, as opposed to the grapefruit IPA. The grapefruit comes through really, you know, pretty strongly, but it's not overwhelming. I don't feel like I've got grapefruit juice here. The grapefruit flavor is stronger in the Schoferhofer, which is, as Dave mentioned, really a shandy. But it's clearly, you know, it's here. It balances that bitterness nicely. It's overall just kind of a bigger flavor in the Sculpin.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, especially with the grapefruit. I mean, you're adding something to it. So. Because I couldn't get the Sculpin, I decided to, against my better judgment, purchase the Sam Adams Rebel Grapefruit IPA.
Okay.
And my judgment was correct. it's nowhere near as good, and I'm not even going to comment. But I think it's interesting because not just Sculpin has gone this whole grapefruit route. There's a lot of other breweries, and I saw probably half a dozen, if not more, today that have gone with some sort of citric fruit added to an IPA that already gives you some sort of citric taste.
Yeah, I mean, I get the impression that they're kind of trying to make their really heavy, bitter beer a little more palatable to a broader audience that way.
I don't disagree. I mean, if you look at the market right now for craft beer, I mean, honestly, Bud Light has been stagnant for 3 years. And that is scary as hell to an industry that used to grow 2 or 3% for sure every year. And 2 or 3% on top of the best beer in the world is a lot of darn money.
Yeah.
Craft has significantly been biting into that, right? So what's the next step for craft? Okay, you have the beer nerds. You have those that have decided they want to get into craft, but don't necessarily want to know the science or the quote-unquote nerddom around it. Whatever. So you have a bunch of people that get into craft beer, and they all have significant others who kind of want to be into it too. Or I might be generalizing there, but I mean, you know, my wife is not a huge fan of craft beer unless it fits a very small paradigm, right? Like, it's she really likes wheat beer. She really likes this. She'll have a drink of my bourbon barrel aged stout and say, "Yeah, that's pretty good. Do you want one?" No. It's just her palate. That's it. She likes wine. She likes the sweeter flavors. So this is a way to take a beer that you produce and you can add something to it. And like Aaron said, you can make it more mass marketable. So I think we're going to see more of that. And they're still going to try to keep it under the nomenclature of IPA because it's a base IPA. So don't get me wrong. Sculpin Grapefruit IPA is awesome. Rebel Grapefruit IPA is not.
All that preface to say this, you know, you can't fix a not great IPA by throwing grapefruit at it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So, no, Richard, have you had a chance to sip on the narrow version yet?
I figured I'd do that as a live. Like, how bad is this?
Oh, okay.
Oh, well,
maybe we'll come back to that at the end.
Wow. It's spicy. yeah, the first thing I'm noticing about that is, yeah, there's a definitely a habanero kick to it, but it's not actually. Hold on a second. Drinking.
He's gone back for seconds. It can't be that bad.
No, I was expecting from, you know, habanero sculpin that it should darn. It's got to have some sort of kick to it, and I'd be very disappointed if it didn't. This one has a kick. It's actually not. It's not as bad as like actually eating a habanero. It's not even as bad as actually eating a jalapeno. It certainly has a that kind of chili spicy afterburn
mm-hmm.
that you have in your mouth.
So you do have a little burn out of it.
There's a little bit of burn, a little bit of heat. Unfortunately, with like the first couple of sips, that's mostly what I'm tasting. And I've had a few chili beers before where their big thing was, look, we have lots of chili flavor in the beer. That's great, but that's the only flavor you have. Like, they drowned out every other flavor. Mm-hmm. So all where they basically said, pain is a flavor, make it so. this one. Yeah, I can tell it's an IPA. There's a very, very faint citrus hoppy kind of flavor after the heat has kind of faded. It's certainly not something I would sit there and drink all day. But it's certainly something I would pair up with, you know, if I'm making actually like some spicy fajitas or something. It'll go great with that. So yeah, I have five more of these. I think I'm making something spicy and Mexican or a spicy chili in the next few days.
I mean, so the real question is the thing's drinkable, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I would sit and drink it on its own.
Right.
But one, I like Beverly, and two, I consider jalapenos to have a mild flavor and kind of a pleasant one.
Yeah.
And I have eaten habaneros on their own. So take whatever I say regarding the heat levels with a grain of salt and then maybe a glass of milk, you know, so
I mean, I'm like out of 10 making jambalaya, I want a 7. So my nose runs and it's all good. But I've had chili beers where I'm just like, this is absolutely horrible. Why would someone even attempt to do such a thing?
Was it the one that had the chili pepper actually in the bottle?
No.
Oh, I've had one of those, and that was that was kind of the pain as a flavor thing.
Yeah. No, and that's what I mean. My thing is that it is really cool to hear that someone did it right.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. Because there's what, Cave Creek Chili Beer? I think that's a big one that's out there. And there's
I've heard of that one.
I think Rogue has done a couple that are okay, but it's like you get a 12-ounce bottle and you're like, all right, I'm going to share this between three people.
All right, so let's do a little, quick little summary here. Before we get away from it, actually, we've talked about what Richard would eat with the with the habanero version, with the regular Sculpin IPA or with the grapefruit Sculpin IPA. For me, I think you could go back to really just about everything we said about the Ranger. I'd want something that was a little more full flavor, something, if I was going to do a cheeseburger or something, I'd want it to be either something that had, some spicy elements in the meat, or like a blue cheeseburger, or something that had some strong flavors that would stand up to the IPA, because I think otherwise you'd just kind of be overwhelmed with that bitter on your palate while you were trying to eat dinner. I don't know. What do you think, Richard?
Pretty much the same thing. The regular Sculpin, anything I said for the Ranger would work. The flavors are pretty close. They're about the same as in terms of bitterness. Just you want something that's going to stand up to it and not overpower the beer, but not be overpowered by it.
But by the way, you're all wrong. According to the website,
well, that's
pairings. Wrong. Yeah, food pairing should be coconut basmati rice, which no one said. Jamaican jerk chicken and tropical bread pudding. All three of those things. That's it.
Tropical bread pudding.
Well, Jamaican jerk chicken
would go really well with the habanero.
Yeah, I mean, the jerk chicken would work. Jerk chicken would work because jerk chicken is going to be that spicy, bold, earthy flavors. And I can see it with like a coconut curry.
Right. And I don't disagree. I was being kind of a smartass. But
Dave being the smartest?
Yeah.
No.
Never, right? I'm glad it's only taken a year for me to, put this forth. But the Jamaican jerk chicken is just kind of like, I want an IPA when I'm eating wings. I mean,
they're basically disassembled wings.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron pointed out it's more of an earthy, spicy than what buffalo is. But it's still good. It's a really big flavor that an IPA can hold up to. So.
Right.
All right. So let's do our usual sort of end of show rankings here. We tried the Ballast Point Sculpin of one form or another, the New Belgium Ranger, and the Goose Island IPA. And Don, why don't you go first? How would you rank these three?
I would rank them the Ranger, the Goose Island, and then the Sculpin. They're all very close. It's just I'm not as big on the really big IPAs or the bigger IPAs. And I guess part of that is I do have a slight allergy to the hops.
So the hoppier it gets, the more it bothers you.
They tend to do something with my sinuses.
Interesting.
So, I don't know what it is, but the stronger the IPA, the more I get blocked up. So if I'm drinking these, I gotta take a decongestant before I do it.
I can almost kind of hear it in your voice, man.
This is awesome.
It is. I don't know what it is.
Same time, but
I don't take the drowsy ones, but that would be my ranking.
All right. How about you, Dave? How do you rank these?
Well, I'm ranking Ballast Point is probably the tops, but it's only going on memory. Like, it's not going from the A to the B to the C.
Right.
I'm a big citrus guy, so I like that Ballast Point thing. I like what Ranger does, but I'll tell you what, I've had Goose Island several times in the last couple months, and it's been because a buddy of mine bought a case of Goose Island, and he doesn't drink it. So when I go hang out at his house, he's like, here, have this. And it's a, you know, 4 16-ounce cans later, I'm like, yeah, this is great. So, but in all honesty, I appreciate the fact that Goose Island, even though there's a big push to go towards the more Americanized whatever, I like the fact that it's kind of stuck to those more British Isles roots, right? Like, it's not completely there, but it's higher in alcohol. It's good. Really, I don't know if there was one except for this Rebel Grapefruit IPA that I'm not even counting as like something I drank tonight. But everything on the list tonight was something it should seek out. And so I'd go Ballast Point, Goose Island, and then Ranger, as much as it pains me to put New Belgium last.
Okay. Well, now, see, for me, I think one of the things that I'm discovering lately is that when it comes to these craft beers, I actually prefer the sour to the bitter. And so I'm actually really kind of excited about the fact that the craft industry, you know, seems to be moving a little bit towards the sours these days. That, you know, the IPAs, while they're still very popular, are sort of, you know, not all that's being done in the craft brewing industry. So for me, I think I'm really kind of surprised at this, but I think I would probably put that Goose Island first, and then the Ballast Point second, and the Ranger last. Not that I didn't like the Ranger, but when it comes to, you know, I was thinking about how I would drink them, and the Goose Island is the one that I could see myself just kind of, you know, relaxing and having a beer with. That would be the one that I'd be most likely to drink. The Ballast Point is one that I could see myself, you know, ordering it out when I was going to eat something like we were talking about, right? Something that's fuller flavor, and I would want a beer that would stand up to it. The Ranger is kind of, for me, stuck in the middle. It's not going to be a beer that I'm going to choose to just relax and drink. At the same time, it's kind of not quite, you know, strong enough to really be the one that I'd want with my wings, for example, or, you know, that I'd want with that, you know, stronger, spicier flavor. I think I'd want the Ballast Point instead. So, you know, that's why it would be third. Not that I didn't like it, but that I think I just, you know, liked the Ballast Point better. And I got to say, as much as I'm enjoying the Ballast Point, I don't think I'm going to buy another $14.99 six-pack. It's good, but it's just not my wheelhouse. You know, I'd rather spend that money. I can spend less than that on, you know, a Crane Bomber of their Apricot Vice that I really love.
Or anything from Boulevard.
That too. All right, so how about you, Richard? We haven't gotten your rankings yet.
Of the four I tried, actually the Habanero is currently sitting at number one. But again, I like bitter and strong, spicy flavors. So the running joke in the household for years has been is that my wife says my trigeminic nerve is broken. It's the nerve that controls your facial muscles and allows you to taste spicy foods. Trigeminal, there we go. The trigeminal nerve. So taking that one out of the equation, I think then I go with the Ranger, then the Sculpin, and the Goose Island last. And I didn't dislike any of them. I think the big difference between the Ranger and the Ballast Point was simply that there's probably about a $2 or $3 difference for the six pack.
Right.
And yeah, it's not a big difference in like absolute number terms, but in relative, $11.99 versus
$14.99. Right.
Yeah, I think the Ranger was $11.99. I'd have to double check, but the Ballast Point were the big expensive ones this week. So yeah, to buy it again, I'd have to really like it. For if it's like a choice of A or B, and B serves equally well and is half the price, I'll go with B.
Right.
Again, that said, I didn't dislike any of them. If anyone wants to buy me one, I will happily drink any of them. So, yeah,
Fair enough.
Firm believer that my favorite type of beer is free, and cold is a good complement to that. And after that, then I get picky. But, you know.
Sure. Now, and before I get away from it, too, I have been remiss in mentioning that one of the nice things about that New Belgium Ranger is that it appears to be sort of the official beer of Walt Disney World pool bars. When you look at the list, it's not on, I mean, I'm not even seeing it on any restaurant menus, interestingly enough, but it shows up on just about all of the pool bar menus from, you know, all-star movies all the way up to the contemporary resort and, you know, most in between. You're going to find it at just about all of the pool bars and a few of the other bars. Bellevue Lounge carries it, Cove Bar, the Contemporary has it. I mean, so there are a few places, but the safest place in Mardi Gras at French Quarter, at Port Orleans. But, you know, the safest bet is a pool bar. They've got pretty much, you know, looks to me like there have got to be a dozen pool bars here that are carrying New Belgium Ranger these days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I found out last time I was there. It was, and I don't know if it's the fact that they just said, we're going to buy X number of thousands of dollars of cans from you.
Well, actually, that probably is a key element, right? Is that that New Belgium started producing a number of their beers in cans, and it's just, it's safer for them to sell cans at poolside than it is bottles.
Sure, well, sure.
Yeah, and that's what they've done. I mean, I remember getting a Pop Century last year, and it was, I mean, everything at the pool bar was in a can. Now, it wasn't the gambit of New Belgium beers that I remember from Yacht Club the year before, but I mean, heck, it was High Life, Schafferhofer, everything else that you could possibly think of from your BMC world, and then it was two or three others, and I mean, New Belgium products were a couple of those. So I'm sure that has something to do with it. It's easier to sell a can, although I don't even think they give it to you. They just give you a freaking glass, right? Like a plastic cup. They don't let you walk away with it.
I don't know. Interesting.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
So
translation, I need to drink more. it's research.
On the other hand, the Ballast Point, I know that I saw the Ballast Point Grapefruit Sculpin someplace when I was there, either January or February. I don't remember now. Bugging me. But I know I saw it somewhere. It's not shown up on any of the menus I can find online.
Right.
But I know that I saw it somewhere. So I think it's one of those ones that's going to just show up occasionally. Meanwhile, the regular Ballast Point Sculpin, that's another one that you're going to find at Todd English's Blue Zoo. So once again, if you haven't tried Blue Zoo, you know, we skipped it when we did our bar crawl this past January. Just we got, you know, tied up elsewhere and we're running behind, so we skipped it. But it's got to be at the top of the list for the next one because, again, we're finding really, you know, great options on the beer menu there. And frankly, we found that what put it on our list for the bar crawl in the first place was the lounge menu looked good. The food menu was interesting. So I have a feeling we'll be back there.
Yeah, I've never been. I need to go. I've heard good
exactly.
things. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, any last thoughts about any of these beers or about IPAs and Walt Disney World in general?
Try them. That's all that matters. there's a bunch of them there. So if you're there for a week, you can try an IPA a day. It keeps the doctor away, from what I hear.
There you go.
Well, yeah, the nice thing with Disney is there's a big variety of beers. So, you know, use it.
That's right. Try something different. So you've heard our thoughts on three different IPAs and really a few bonus IPAs as well that, you know, weren't on the official tasting list for the night. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter. and participate in discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. And we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/dizdadspodcast. And a couple other notes here. You know, I haven't mentioned this in a long time, but if you've been listening to the show, if you're enjoying the show, really would appreciate it if you would hop over to iTunes and review the podcast. Those reviews help make it easier for other people to find the show. And last time I looked, it had been quite a while since somebody had reviewed the show. I think that that's kind of, you know, relatively normal for a show that's been around for a while. But it would be a big boost. So, like I said, if you've been listening, you've been enjoying the show, just hop over to iTunes and write us up a new review. If you've been listening and not enjoying the show so much, just forget what I said. Also, I want to remind you that next week we'll be coming to you live at 7 o'clock Central Time over on DizTalkRadio.com. The chat room there is up and running, and you can stream the audio right from that site. DizTalkRadio.com was the host for our last live show. It's going to become our permanent live show home, and I think it went really well last time. I think people enjoyed the setup there quite a bit. So do come over there and join us. We're going to be celebrating the 5th birthday of the Diz Dads podcast, and we hope you'll join us for the party. So until next time, until you join us there live, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Don Donfris.
Good night, everybody.
Richard Grady.
Good night, everyone.
And David Jordan.
Happy beverage drink.